So I'm on the phone in Pittsburgh, and look who's back from Red Deer.
From Red Deer to Stouffville on the tie line. Nice, clear sounding line. Actually, you know, while I was gone, I did the PDO cast with Dimitri on Skype, and it sounded pretty good. Why don't we do Skype? It's 2016. It's 2016 and 16, and I'm discovering Skype, Greg.
We could do Skype. There's a number of different options for us if we ever wanted to do something that didn't involve this production that we do. But then we would be squeezing Sam out of the equation. I don't think that's fair to Sam. He's a big he's an investor in the show. After all, he's a stockholder. As well.
Oh, is he? I had no idea. Is he one?
Jeez, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Are we beholden?
Yes, in the corporation that is MVSW, Sam is CFO.
Oh,
cool effing Ontarian.
Cool effing Ontarian. It's cool effing Owen Soundian. Is that what they call it?
Okay.
Sammy?
Owen Sounders, more like it.
Owen Sounders, okay, yeah. All right.
Sounders for short.
Tell for those of our listeners who are American, tell us all about the Memorial Cup and how it went.
It was great. First of all, I like the way you say Memorial, like you say Stanley Cup. second of all,
and a happy Memorial Day to all of you.
I was going to say belated Memorial Day. It was good. I mean, the tournament was dominated by the London Knights. And in the final game, man, the Huskies took them to, I don't know if you watched it all, Greg, but took them to overtime. Was a real good final. But I mean, London, clearly the class, you know, of the entire tournament. The Brandon Wheat Kings exploded for various reasons, which we'll get into on the Junior podcast tomorrow. But, I mean, a lot of new, the one thing that I always love about this tournament is new faces emerge and new stars emerge and guys sort of elevate their stock in everybody's eyes. Some guys take a dip as well. Not that anyone needed to hear more about Mitch Marner, but he did answer some questions, namely about handling physicality. Guys like Timo Meier, the San Jose Sharks prospect, and guys like Philip Myers, defenseman for the Huskies, you know, went at him hard. Like, he got rocked in that third game against Rouyn-Noranda, and all he did was come back and score 4 points against them. So now I'm at a place with Mitch Marner, which is, can he play in the NHL next year? Yes. Can he handle the physicality? Yeah, I don't see why not. The only question I have with Mitch Marner, and it has nothing to do with him, would be more along the lines of how many rookies how many kids does Toronto want to have in the lineup when you're already going to deal with Austin Matthews and, you know, Nylander and Shoshnikov and Hyman and the rest of the kids you have up front. How many, do you want to add Mitch Marner on that list?
It ties back into what you've always said about the oil, which is that this Leafs team is probably not a playoff team, and how many of these kids do you want experiencing this nonsense in the first couple of years of Matthews?
Same thing. I don't think that this is a playoff team next year. I know there's a lot of executives around Sportsnet that probably don't want to hear that, but I still don't think. But they'll be a more competitive team. They'll be an exciting team. I just don't see them as a playoff team yet. I think they're still in lottery contention for next season, but still. It was good. You know, it was, I mean, the Memorial Cup is always my favorite. It's fun. It's a wonderful tournament. You get to meet a lot of new people. Got to know Jason Fortier really well as assistant coach of the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies. I think that guy's going to be a head coach, somewhere down the line. Had a lot of good talks with all the people from the London Knights organization. But here is a couple of the thrills that I had on the Saturday off day. I've always wanted to do this. Richie Sutter picked me and Colby up and say, come on, I'm taking you for the tour today. So we got in his truck, and the first thing we did was we went to Brian Sutter's farm.
No, really?
It was the coolest. Yep. And it was just Brian and his wife there. And Brian, he's out on the tractor when we pulled up, and he's working, you know, he's moving cows around and moving cattle around. And we saw a bull in his front yard. And then we sat down on Brian Sutter's veranda. And I just listened to hockey stories for like an hour and a half.
That's so cool.
And then from there, we went to Brent Sutter's new cottage, and just Brent and his wife, Connie, and their daughter were just there and sat out on the dock and listened to more hockey stories for like another 90 minutes. The Sutter family was like all of them, like Merrick Sutter, who's one of the kids, is part of the organizing committee. He did a great job. Like this was a really efficiently run tournament. And the nice thing about it was, unlike other tournaments where you have the venue for the hockey, then you have the party area somewhere else, and there's another attraction, like everything was right around the NMAX Centrium. Like the beer fest, the fan, like all that stuff was all centralized and all localized. And here's what I really admired about it. So by the end, It's the top team from the Ontario Hockey League and the top team from the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League that are playing in the final. So you would think, oh, well, there's no team from the West. You know, Brandon explodes in three games. Red Deer loses in the semifinal to Rouyn Noranda. It's going to be a tough ticket. Place was packed.
Nice.
And it's a great junior hockey rink. It's 7,000 seats. It's perfect for this event, perfect for a really good, healthy junior hockey market. And but yeah, man, hanging out with Brian Sutter on his farm. Check that out. Wish, when did I ever think of my life I was going to hang out at Brian Sutter's farm?
That's
and then
fantastic.
Brent Sutter's caught it. So yeah, the Saturday was the thrill off the ice for me.
You're basically the honorary 18th Sutter brother right now.
Might as well be.
Might as well be.
Add me into the family.
All right.
Great tournament. Congratulations,
coaches.
London Knights.
Let's pause on coaches for a second. There's two things I want to bring up before we get to game one of the cup final. The first is Ken Hitchcock announces that, first he says, I'm only taking 1-year contracts. And then he says, oh, and by the way, this will be my last year. so we got that. What do you think about Hitch going back to St. Louis? Does this team have another run in them with him at the helm?
Depends what happened with David Backes. Depends what happens with Kevin Shattenkirk. And I think maybe the overarching question is, what does this mean between the relationship with Ken Hitchcock and Vladimir Tarasenko?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I had someone tell me, you know, I think this was on Twitter. And at first I brushed it off, and then I thought about it a little bit more. I said, well, maybe there is something to that. Someone tweeted at me, hey, Vlad Tarasenko's dad's a coach. Do you think he's playing the game of let's try to get the coach fired here?
Oh, man.
And if that was true, then that's insidious. But something did happen with Tarasenko in the postseason.
I heard, you know, you're around these big events and you wind up falling into some information. And I made mention of it today in the post about Hitchcock. I heard Tarasenko's got some conditioning issues. Like, I heard he is carrying maybe a little bit more bulk, let's say, than he should, and that's one of the reasons why he wasn't as effective as he was earlier in the playoffs. Yeah. Is that by the time he played the Sharks, he didn't really have a lot left in the tank. So that's kind of disconcerting a little bit. I mean, he's pretty young and he's being paid pretty handsomely to not be in that kind of shape. But honestly, not the first young player with a large contract early in his career who may not necessarily have the proper conditioning to go deep in a playoff run. I say that as someone who used to cover the Capitals.
Well, the interesting thing about the St. Louis Blues is, and we've talked about this all season long, it's a team that's transitioned in front of us. It's a team that's gone through the youth movement. You know, for as many David Backes's and Troy Browers, and he's probably going to end up elsewhere too, and Paul Stastny's there are on the team. I mean, this is Robbie Fabry, and this is the aforementioned Tarasenko, and this is Jaden Schwartz, and this is Colton Parayko, and he's probably the reason why they can move on from Kevin Shattenkirk on that right side and bump Parayko's minutes up. So what we've seen, what Doug Armstrong has been able to do here is the rebuild on the fly.
Yeah.
So you can walk away from David Backes. You can walk away from Troy Brower. You can make a move with Kevin Shattenkirk. You can maybe restore Brian Elliott's sanity and let him go somewhere else, you know, because you've got Jake Allen, who's been the guy or the guy in waiting for how many years now, and you got a bunch of other kids, whether, you know, throw Dmitry Yaskin into that equation too, and Robbie Fowler. Mm-hmm. Like, I still think St. Louis does have one more run, but a lot of it depends on what they do with the Shattenkirk trade that we all think is going to happen, and what happens with Vladimir Tarasenko and the coach.
Yeah. I like the one year contract. And I like Hitch saying it's his final ride, because it really does suck all of the politics and gamesmanship out of the equation. Like, you're clearly not getting him fired. he's got a clear expiration date on his coaching tenure in St. Louis. So and he doesn't have to dick around with any of these guys either, in the sense that, like, they know he's gone after this season. So I don't know. There's a certain clarity of mission that occurs in this situation now for the Blues.
Doesn't that bug you? I mean, if you look at players, okay, this is a wide brush thought here. Players, don't get offended, but you know it's true. If, much like you always say, if you give a player a reason not to body check or hit, he won't. And if you deliberately hand a team a lame duck coach who's there for 1 year and you know he's gone anyway, you can say all the right things about being professional. It doesn't matter if the guy's got a 3-year contract, a 5-year contract, or a 2-month contract. You play the same way. But do you? you know the guy's going to be gone. You know you're done with this headache. Is there not an element of, let's just put up with it for one more year, and then it's fresh start?
Yeah, but I think in this case, like, it's putting up with it for one more year in a sense that these guys, they know what this guy is. They know how he coaches. They know his personality. And I think there's a certain amount of, like, all right, let's just do this one more time, and hopefully it works. We know he's a good coach. We know he's a pain in the ass. We'll be done with it after this season. So let's all strap in and do this now. I think that's more the mindset in reading some of the quotes that have come out of that locker room after the season. So I kind of dig this whole sort of like one last ride with the old Civil War reenactor.
You think he does love that? You think this is going to be let's do it for Hitch time in St. Louis?
No, I think this is...
Okay, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
St. Louis starts the season 2-15. What happens to Ken Hitchcock?
He probably retires.
He's asked to retire? He's asked to retire by Doug Armstrong?
He won't be fired. He's unfireable at this point.
You think so?
You couldn't do that to this guy. He would step down for health reasons or to give Kirk Muller some BS reason, but they won't fire him, I don't think. The other thing, too, is did I hear that Dale Hunter might be in the mix for the Anaheim job?
I just assumed they would give it to one of those assistants, but I did not hear. It's funny because I was around Dale for 12 days and didn't hear anything about Dale Hunter in Anaheim.
Yeah. That might have just been something that I picked up somewhere, like a virus. And the last thing is, this came up in Bettman's availability yesterday. What do you feel about the issue with Mark Hunter being in such a prominent position with the Leafs, but also having so many ties with junior hockey?
The only people I've ever heard complain about that are other OHL operators, and they feel it's a recruiting issue because he can provide, and you just saw this with Mitch Marner last year, that direct pipeline to the NHL. By still being one of the owners of the London Knights and being the director of player personnel for the Toronto Maple Leafs, all of a sudden you have a situation where recruiting for the London Knights is that much easier because one of the owners works for, arguably, the most important team in the NHL.
Right.
But that's just coming from other junior hockey operators. That's not coming from anyone else. Those are the only people I've ever heard sort of raise a Spockian eyebrow about it.
Spockian eyebrow.
This
is highly illogical. all right, let's get to game one.
What have you heard about? I'm curious. What are your thoughts on that one?
It just came up with Detman's availability yesterday in the sense that, there was, if not a conflict of interest, a competitive advantage. But I mean, it's not as if, to me, it's no different than any sort of competitive advantage guys have in relationships with former agents, former teams. I mean, the whole thing is so incestuous. I mean, look at the situation we have in the final. You have Pete DeBoer, who was hired by Jim Rutherford for his first job. You've got Mike Sullivan, who played with and coached Joe Thornton, who played with the GM of the Sharks, Doug Wilson. Like, the whole thing's just a big gumbo of relationships.
Which industry is different? I get it because we cover hockey and this is our lives and we're all hockey fans and this is the life that we live. But are other industries different than this? Or do you always bring in people whose track record you know and you have a history with?
I feel like that's a good question because I do feel like in hockey there's much more of a known, not only a known commodity aspect to it, but also I used to work side by side with this guy and I trust him. Like, I feel like that's, and I know in coaching in the NFL, there's a lot of that too. I mean, the same like Bill Parcells guys always stuck together and everything else. But like,
yeah.
I just feel like in hockey, there's a bit more of that. There's a bit more of I could think outside the box and give this person a chance, or I could hire my college line mate for that job. You know what I mean?
You know what part of it is? A lot of those positions are so scarce. You want to bring in people that you think won't knife you in the end.
Yeah.
Right? Why would I bring in an unknown commodity who may end up taking my job as opposed to, right, someone mm-hmm. that I know that I've been golfing and drinking with?
Right.
This is why you look at, like, what was everyone like raised the flag? Oh, what, John Chyka? What is he? What's he doing in this league and all that? Well, you just don't know him because you never golfed with him.
Right.
Right, you just didn't go and get drunk with him at the Breakers,
right, exactly.
However many times.
So that's usually how it works, unless you're Wayne Gretzky, then you get your agent hired as GM. That's the way other way it could work too, right?
That is the way that it worked. Yeah.
That's all right. Game one of the final was last night. It was super fun. Like Joe Thornton said, it's going to be a series in which both teams are exerting their will on the other. One team will have momentum for a period, the other team will take it back, and then they'll just trade it back and forth like a hot potato. I really thought the Sharks were going to pull it out, to be honest with you. But the Pens get a break with Burns losing his stick, and then a nice play by Letang to Bonino in front, and Bonino does what Bonino does. Bonino, scoring a big goal in a big spot.
Hey, man, that call, by the way, I know the guy, Harnarayan Singh, he's a good friend of mine. I actually talked to him a couple of days ago. He's someone we should have on the podcast.
Harnarayan Singh. That was awesome.
If you haven't heard the Hockey Night in Canada Punjabi broadcast, it is exceptional. And Harnarayan is a total star. His calls are the best. And he's such a good dude, too. I'm going to call Harnarayan after the show and get him on the podcast. Because that guy's top drawer. Harnarayan's a great. But, yeah, do yourself a favor. His call when Nick Bonino scores is a Picasso every time. The Bonino goal is what makes me excited about, well, first of all, that Crosby pass on the second goal was outstanding.
But the
Letang play on the Bonino goal tells me everything that I want to know about this series, I hope. So, yes, Letang reads that Burns has lost the stick, and he gets down to the corner, and instead of saying, uh-oh, it's a tie game, I better, mind my knitting and get back to my position, he stays with it.
Right.
That's a defenseman that's under the red line, staying with the puck, because he's sniffing out a chance. How many other guys in that situation look at the clock, see what time it is, see what period it is, look at what the score is, and say, oh, shit, I got to get back there.
Right?
Not Letang. It's great.
Yeah, indeed. And listen, I don't want to besmirch the good name of the people in our industry, but the two people who connected on the most important goal in Game 1 were the two people who didn't speak to the media on Media Day. So there you go. Clarity of mind.
What? Letang and Bonino didn't talk to the media?
But Letang came out on game day to talk to the media because he didn't do his availability on media day. And Bonino, I think, was still technically like hurt, so he didn't go. But yeah, they both connected on the game-winning goal. So that was kind of interesting. Anyways.
You know what? This one, I mean, listen. First of all, Martin Jones stands on his head in the first period. That was San
brilliant.
Jose, like, holy smokes, what the hell is happening here? We're taking a drink out of a fire hose. We're getting killed. I mean, the fact that the score, was it 2-0 after the first, was only 2-0, says a lot about Martin Jones, because that should have been a 5-0 period. Pittsburgh just all over them.
I think San Jose took enough out of that game to feel pretty good. Like,
totally.
Like, because that first period was one they have never gotten their asses handed to them like that in the playoffs. Like, that was a beating in the first period. But they showed enough last night where I think they can say, all right, if our zone exits are better and we don't allow the Penguins to swarm every one of our players and actually are smart with the puck and don't spend the majority of a period in our own zone skating around, we can be as controlling as they can be as far as the pace and the puck possession. I think they can feel pretty good about that.
Yep, they just can't move as quick as Pittsburgh can. But that's okay, because if you think faster and move the puck quicker, I mean, the last time I checked, the puck goes faster than the feet, then San Jose should be fine. Look, dude, this one has and I hope I'm right about this, and I never call for 7 games, but I hope this thing goes 7 games, don't you? Like, give me 6 more of that. I was watching that, Memorial Cup final between Randa and London, and I'm like, I know it's a 1-and-done, but can this be a best-of-7, please? And don't you feel that same way about Pittsburgh and San Jose?
See, I'm eating like crap. I'm drinking too much, which is saying something. So I would take 5 more maybe of those games.
That's all your heart and arteries can handle is 4 or 5 more of these.
I'm trying, man. I hit the elliptical before I did the podcast. I'm doing what I can. I'm trying to maintain.
It's good.
It's just tough.
Do something every single day. I made that vow when I went to Red Deer. Every day I was going to the gym or out on the road to do something. Oh, dude, I dragged Colby Armstrong into deep water. I took him on a run and told him it was only going to be like half an hour, 45 minutes. Took him out for 2 hours. Totally gassed him, and I think he burned his face.
The issue is that we're in Pittsburgh, and the problem here is that they actually don't have salads in this town. And if they do have salads, they have French fries on them.
Dude, you realize I was in Alberta. That's Canada's Texas. You do realize that.
What does a vegetarian do, or a vegan do in Alberta?
It's a lot of parsley. You count the parsley off your steak, sir? Thankfully, I found a Lebanese place near the hotel, and I kind of dined out there. Oh, by the way, guess who came down to say hi? Our buddies Karen Douglas came down, Melissa Bergeson came down
brilliant.
To say hey, and our buddy from Arizona, Glenn Law, came by to say hello. And a bunch of dudes at FanFest kept pulling me aside and said, hey, man, listen. Like, I am so much more blown away and come away feeling a lot better from conversations with people that say, hey, man, I listened to your podcast, as opposed to, hey, man, I recognize you from television. Is that weird? I'm just like, hey, yeah, dude, sorry about the podcast. Why do you listen to this shit?
Yeah,
it's a goofy.
I feel the same way. I had a couple dudes come up to me at this bar a couple days ago, which, by the way, in true to form, it's apparently a beer bar, but then on Sundays it becomes a tiki bar. So your boy had to just keep on ordering drinks in funny cups. Like, I had a parrot, I had a bamboo shoot, and then I had a big fish. So I just kept drinking just to get the novelty cups. But I had two guys come over and say, hey, and they both said, you know, it's no longer like, hey, we like the blog. It's like, we love the podcast. And when I hear that from people, it tells me that these are individuals who are part of our larger family, you know? And, like, if they've stuck with us and they dig what we say and they listen on the reg, that means that we could hang. And I always appreciate – it's almost like them saying, you know what, I'm okay. You don't have to worry about me yelling at you about your opinion about the Patrick Marleau hit. We can have civil conversations.
Yeah, man. How much time did you spend on the Marleau hit today on Twitter?
Jesus. Here's the thing about player safety, and it's never going to go away. It is this need for comparison, and it's a need to compare to apples and dump trucks, because like the Letang hit that half of Pittsburgh is saying, well, if he got a suspension, Marleau should get a suspension, has absolutely nothing to do with the Marleau hit. One was interference on a play where the puck was a mile away, and one was a bang bang play last night with Marleau. And I thought the NHL completely got it right. I know we're all very, you know, hesitant and hair trigger when it comes to contact with the head, but there's contact with the head in so many situations that's not targeting the head and not a play that rises to the level of a suspension. It's just stupid.
I know. I'm not going to say anything. I'm done with it. I'm done arguing hits. I'm worn out.
Well,
arguing hits to the head.
It's like, if people really want that standard, and again, like, you know, Bettman made this point yesterday about offside. Like, someone brought up, well, you know, is it really in the best interest of the league to wipe away goals for a guy being a toenail offside? And Bettman said, but that's not the point. The point is that if you want that standard to exist, then we need to rethink the whole thing. And it's the same thing with hits to the head. Like, if you want to be...
Next time, hang on, could you pause on that?
Yeah.
I really wanted someone to follow that question up with, well, if we're that married to the offside... And rules of the law, letter of the law, you know, it's the rules, it's not interpretation. Can anyone ask him about dump-ins and icings?
What about them?
Well, if you're not over center when you dump the puck in, it's icing, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's getting the call right, isn't it?
Oh, geez.
If we're that married to that standard, Gary, why don't we apply it to dump-ins?
So you're saying the black and white enforcement of dump-ins and icings? That's, I mean, you know,
no, but if, but no, but no, but
they don't always directly lead to goals. Will probably be his response.
I don't know, man. Strategically, dump-ins.
Yeah,
that's kind of like been the history of hockey, really.
Yeah.
My point
on the Marleau thing is like, if you want that to be a suspension, then fine, then we need to change the rules. But get ready for guys skating into the zone on every single rush with their heads down, knowing that as long as their head is down, they can't be touched.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm not trying to be a guy that's like, oh, if you take away fighting, then you're just going to have, you know, sword, like Douglas Fairbanks sword play with sticks. Like, I still think that's kind of a straw man argument, but in this one, I'm serious. Like, do you honestly think that a league of guys that turn their back to hits and dive at every turn to draw penalties aren't going to skate with their heads down into the zone, knowing that if anybody touches them, they're getting a suspension?
Couple of things.
You don't think that's going to happen?
couple of things here about concussions and skating with your head down. There's no contact in the women's game, but you know what the level of concussions is? It's sky high.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I think lacrosse is a great complementary sport to hockey, and I've got both my kids playing it right now. TJ's got a game tonight. Is I want them to play a secondary sport or a complementary sport that encourages them to keep their head up, and that's lacrosse does, because the object of play is in the air, whether it's contact or not. I mean, at the end of all of this, the puck is on the ground. Your eyes are naturally drawn to looking down towards it, which is why you need to do things to make sure your head stays up. And as barbaric as this may sound, I do think you're actually safer having contact, even to the head, when your head is down, as a reminder that you shouldn't do that. And if you have a game where everyone's going to skate with their head down looking at the puck, I would even make the argument, Greg, that the rate of concussion might just go up.
Mm.
If you're making it illegal to hit to that head.
It's, I think, possible.
I think you need to be encouraged to keep it up. Keep your head up.
Yeah.
It's the oldest saying in the book. Like other guys that, you know, go after it and, you know, want to pick the head. Yeah, of course it happens. Less now than it ever has, but it still does. But now anytime anything comes close, it's Chicken Little and everyone throws their arms up in the air, and then you get partisan politics because, I mean, you saw how the Pittsburgh Penguins fans reacted to this last night, and you can understand why. Oh, how different is this than Rome and Horton? Oh, what the hell? What's going about Letang? He got dinged.
Oh, like, God, the Letang hit was just had nothing to do with the Marlowe hit. But anyway.
I know.
And the other thing, too, is I was talking to somebody this morning about this, too. Marlowe made the argument last night that Rust skated into him, which is accurate, but it is one of the most impossible things for a hockey player to describe without sounding as if he is making the worst excuse you could possibly make for there being contact on a play. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he skated into me is like when a guy gets caught cheating and he's like, well, I tripped and it fell in. Like, it's just nonsense to the layman.
Marlowe was trying to hit him. Like, Marlowe was making a play towards him to initiate contact. And then Rust put his head down and reached for the puck. Like, show me what Marlowe should have done in that situation. Again, I come back to it. Show me what Marlowe should have done in that situation. And if you tell me, get out of the way, then what you're saying is, in a Stanley Cup final playoff game, you want players to get out of the way of other players who have just entered the zone.
Mm-hmm.
I can assure you, there are zero coaches who would find that understandable and say, you know what, Patrick, you did a good job. They may have got a scoring chance or even a goal, but at least you didn't hurt that player. Good for you.
So, moving off this, what's your take on this series? I don't even know what your not pick, because you don't really pick winners in series. I don't know what your not pick was. But what was your thoughts on the series coming into it, and what do you think after one game?
Coming into it, I think the difference is going to be the blue line, and then that way it's advantage San Jose Sharks. I think the goaltenders are a wash. I think Pittsburgh's a faster team, but I don't think they defend as well as the San Jose Sharks do. Even though they lost the first game, I'm still picking the Sharks to come out of this one, 6 or 7.
Yeah, I am too. I still think that, first of all, I think the 5-1 record after losses is something that you can't ignore. And I also think that, like you said, advantage on the blue line, advantage on special teams. You saw last night what that power play can do, and how much it can energize them. And I do think they're going to get more opportunities than the Lightning did in this series, just based on the way they play and the stats being what they are as far as their ability to draw penalties. But I think they know all they need is one in Pittsburgh. This team has played so damn well in San Jose. Like, they played – remember the first period of game one? That's what they do in San Jose to everybody they play there, this playoff. Yeah. And I just feel like they know if they need one in Pittsburgh. And I think they know that if they get one in Pittsburgh, they can win 3 games at home and win the series.
Yep. I don't disagree at all. I don't disagree. But this one so far does have the makings of being a great one. And outside of the first period, where it really wasn't competitive, the last 40 minutes were insanely good.
Yeah.
So, yes, 6 more games like that, please. Sorry about your heart. Sorry about your liver. Sorry about your arteries. Sorry about your future triple bypass. I apologize for all those things.
I also wanted to get your take on what I wrote a story about DeBoer this week about I was interested to find his approach to this team because, you know, the knock on the Sharks has always been that they're a bunch of laid-back dudes who love living by the beach and they all have no-move clauses and yada, yada, yada. And so DeBoer comes in, and instead of cracking the whip, instead of making him skate, instead of trying to, you know, break him, he basically says, just do whatever, dude. Take a bunch of days off. Optional skates. Why are you on the ice for an optional skate? Get off the ice. Told you it's optional. Like, it was such an interesting, different approach than you'd ever expect for a team that didn't make the playoffs, that underachieved, and yet it clearly enabled them to do what they've done this season. A guy coming in and saying, yeah, you know what? You guys can dictate terms a little bit as far as when you want to participate in this stuff.
A couple of things. One, I don't think it's just Peter DeBoer. I think it's also Steve Spott, and I think it's Bob Bugner.
Uh-huh.
I think that, especially when you look at the dynamic between Peter DeBoer and Steve Spott, I mean, Peter DeBoer comes in and there is a presence there. Like, he commands a presence as a head coach. It's not the totalitarian, which is not going to work with a player like Joe Thornton, but he does command, there's a certain, you know, aura about him when he walks into a room. Steve Spott's the lovable players guy.
Mm-hmm.
That they all love. He's always been this way. That's Steve Spott. So I think they have that dynamic working for them. The other thing that happened this year is, I mean, every year, of course, San Jose gets dumped on and dumped on. Oh, you know, classic chokers. You know, everyone's been false started on San Jose Sharks. You know, the greatest team to never win the Stanley Cup again. And what did Doug Wilson do? He went out and he added a goalie, Martin Jones. He added a defenseman, Paul Martin. And he added a winger, Joel Ward. And I think the message to all that, all those players in that room was, we're not dead yet.
Right.
And they still believe in us. Even though a couple of years ago, I love the way it tries to get massaged now. Oh, no, no, he wasn't trying to trade Joe Thornton, but teams were calling about Joe Thornton. Oh, my God. Okay. All right. I think that was a message to those guys that the general manager hasn't given up on them.
Yeah.
As much as Doug Wilson may have hated everybody in that room after bowing out against the Kings, the likes of the way that they did, here's a guy that's added something at every single position to give themselves a shot in the arm. I think you couple that with the coaching staff, not just the coach, but the entire coaching staff. And I think that's one of the big recipes for this season.
Yeah, and again, like, you know, he did that in Jersey too. I mean, Adam Oates and Larry Robinson were as much a reason why the Devils made that run as anything. He surrounds himself with really smart people. There's something to be said for that. So that was interesting. And I don't know. I agree with you. I think it's going to be a really fun series. I think there's some really good stories on both sides. And so I'm happy with this matchup. I don't know if I'm happy with the travel in this matchup because San Jose is really out there.
Yeah, I know. Hey, man, you went through the Rangers and the Kings. You did New Jersey and Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's what Ruby was saying before. She's like, you know, this is the first time you're going to be covering the full series. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, last year you had to leave in the middle of it because you were the best man at your best friend's wedding. I'm like, that's right. And she's like, and then the other ones, it was like, you know, one of the other teams in the series was always like a team around here. I'm like, oh God, you're right. This is traveling now. I don't like this.
I know. You're not a professional writer. You're a professional traveler. In the last couple of minutes of the podcast here, because I know you got to punt for availability. I always try to make sure we mention these players when they pass away here on the podcast. Tom Lysiak, who passed away yesterday, who everyone will always remember for the Ron Foyt incident when he tripped the linesman on a faceoff and paid the price of 20 games, and that was. Mm-hmm. He did play afterwards, but that was pretty much it for his career. Passed away yesterday, and then this morning waking up to the bad news that Rick McLeish has passed away. McLeish was the guy. He was one of my very early hockey memories was watching Rick McLeish tip a goal into a Boston Bruins net that gave the Philadelphia Flyers a Stanley Cup win in 1974. The shot by Moose Dupont from the point that he tipped in. He was one of those guys that early on when I first started following hockey, I thought was like the most incredible goal scorer. Scored the first 50 goals for the Philadelphia Flyers. And then he was the first guy, because I would always be scared of players getting, I could never understand why players didn't wear, at that time I was a kid, I'd just say, why don't they wear turtlenecks, Dad, to protect their neck? Why don't they have anything? Why don't they have turtlenecks on, Dad? I remember specifically in a game against the Los Angeles Kings, him getting his throat slashed. And it was Marcel Dion, the Hall of Famer, cut him, and it was pretty bad. He sort of slid into Dion's skates and cut him for 80 stitches around the neck. And I remember being horrified by it. And then some years later, we had the Clint Malarchuk Tuttle incident. But McLeish passes away. He's from Lindsay, Ontario, which is not that far from where I live. It's where my in-laws live as well. And, you know, whenever you go to the community center there, there's, you know, big, you know, posters of Rick McLeish and, you know, a little statue and trophies and all kinds of stuff of Rick McLeish growing up playing hockey in Lindsay. So for me, he was one of my early hockey memories and one of the early hockey superstars. And Lysiak, I remember, like yesterday, him tripping Ron Foyt. Which was a huge flashpoint issue because that was the automatic 20-game suspension. And, you know, oh, I don't know, someone like Paul Holmgren punched a referee and only got three that year. But I guess Lysiak played on Atlanta. He didn't play on the Philadelphia Flyers. Thank you very much. Anyway, debate for another story. But, yes, so the NHL loses a couple of great ones. Lysiak played on a line of Medicine Hat with Lanny McDonald. And there was some debate for a long time who was the better centerman in the NHL, Daryl Sittler or Tom Lysiak. Lysiak probably the victim of playing for the wrong team at the wrong time. But the NHL loses a couple of great ones in Tom Lysiak and Rick McLeish.
Well said, sir. And finally, I will mention my favorite factoid from the Gary Bettman Bill Daly availability, which is that the expansion Las Vegas Black Knights, at least we know it'll be them, maybe. And maybe if there's another team, but definitely them, because we all know that we're going to Vegas, will not be gifted a top pick in the draft. They will have very high odds in the lottery, but they will not be given one of the top two picks in the draft by virtue of being a new team. I thought that was an interesting little factoid.
Well, I mean, they're going to be there will be a very favorable expansion draft for them. Thank you very much.
Yeah, they're going to be a playoff team in their first season. Let's be honest. they're going to get the fourth best defenseman from like the top eight teams in this league. They're going to have a legit starting goalie, and if they can cobble together an offense from spare parts and free agents, they're going to be a playoff team.
Yeah, they're going to be fine. So, yeah, that's okay. I'm not crying about the Las Vegas Black Knights not getting one of the top couple of picks.
They don't have to get, like, Patrick Laine or something, you know, along with all the other blessings they'll be bestowed upon them. But anyways, that's it. All right, so listen, here's the update on gear. I'll just say this for everybody listening.
Yeah, what's
going on? I
checked
the tracking number, and the plug for the magic radio box that was supposed to be here over the weekend will now be here on Wednesday. And by here, I mean New York. So maybe we do this again like this another day and then have that plug shipped out to Santa Clara and try to do this thing for reals on Magic Boxes. Or we just scrap the whole damn thing and just do it on Skype like you mentioned.
I'd be down doing it on Skype. I've done it a couple times on Dimitri's podcast on Skype. I'd be down trying it that way.
Word. All right.
I'm trying it out.
Well, you be well. That's the show for today.
You too.
Thank you to producer Sam, who we're trying to freeze out of the process.
Greg.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about your health. All this travel. Enough of the drinking. Enough with the bad eating. Enough of the late night Taco Bell. Just stop.
Well,
it's not going to come to an end. We're going to have an intervention.
I appreciate your concern, and I will tell you that I've definitely made a change in my life, in the sense that there is no late night Taco Bell here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, attaboy. What have you replaced it with?
Nothing. I'm in Pittsburgh. There's late night nothing as far as food. So you'll be happy to know that the city has gamed it so I can't eat and then go to sleep with disgusting fatty food in my belly.
Good boy.
Thank you.
Good job. Well, thank you, Pittsburgh, because I'd like to do this podcast for a long time with Greg. So I thank you, City of Pittsburgh, for trying to help me.
Hey, listen, man, you could do the podcast with me for a long time. It's just that there might be some beeping and respirator noises where there used to be words. I don't know why that's so bad. All right, dude.
Yeah.
Great to talk to you.
Yeah,
thanks,
man.
Everybody, for listening to the show. We'll talk to you down the road. Bye.